So, thanks very much. Thanks, Paco. I'm really pleased and actually pleasantly surprised to be invited back onto the Ask Blue podcast, especially after my previous transgressions on earlier episodes talking about goats when I was supposed to be talking about payment methods.
That was fun. It was good fun.
Yeah. So, obviously, normally on this podcast or podcast, as I personally like to call it.
I like that very much. I mean, because you're one of those who are really proposing to do things different, you know, and I think naming this a podcast, you know, makes a difference. Huh?
It sounds like podcast, but it's about pos, so it's a podcast. So
I think I got the message. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
This was your idea. When I saw this, I thought, this is...
yeah, he's got a reputation, right?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a good thing, but normally we're here. We talk about trends in technology. I think today we're going to take a slightly different tack and.
Correct.
Talk about, I think, probably certainly a much more important issue, and probably the most important issue affecting the market and the world today. So we're going to talk about sustainability and the environment. So serious subject that we're obviously all concerned about, or should be concerned about, but hopefully have a little bit of fun while we're talking about it. I'll try to refrain from talking any more about goats in this episode.
Never say never, you know. There will be options. No, but you're absolutely right, Richard. I mean, this is one of those hot topics that we all talk about it, you know, and then, I think there is a lot of misunderstandings, a lot of knowledge that needs to be transmitted, and of course, a lot of opportunities, right? And I'm very happy that we have Dale with us today. You know, we've been meeting with Dale in several presentations, events, and we've been talking about this. So I think your idea of why don't we make a podcast out of this, it was absolutely great.
It's catching on.
But it's already inside, yeah. Right? So, but I think we should start, Richard, by asking Dale. You know, we consider you a kind of ambassador of environment from Epson, right? But maybe you should tell us why.
Captain Planet, right? That's your job title?
Captain Planet. I can't like that. Captain Planet, yeah. I will print a T-shirt for myself with that on.
It's green T-shirt.
Yeah, with green inks and everything. But yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right, Paco. It is kind of one of those topics which are actually, it's quite challenging to talk about and to start a conversation about. And in fact, even in the planning of this, it was, well, how do we start talking about it? What do people want to say?
Yeah.
And if that's something that we can achieve through this podcast, then
that's right.
Then I think we've achieved something, just to make people aware, that take some of the fear and the concern around talking about sustainability, both at home and particularly at work, where it can sometimes be a bit more challenging to see the difference you made.
I think that's the thing. It's not that we're necessarily proposing to solve any issues, but I think just being part of the dialogue about it, really part of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, why don't we start from the basic? You know, when you talk about sustainability and you talk about environment. By the way, thank you for choosing those two words, which are very difficult to be pronounced by a non-speaking, non-English speaker. But anyway, when we talk about that, you know, I think we are focusing on a too large kind of concept, right? Topic,
yeah.
And I think we should really focus. I think today is going to be much more on retail and hospitality focus. Of course, we are going to be addressing some other opportunities, but mainly it's going to be about that. And one of the facts that you brought at the beginning is like, it is quite impacting. It's like 80% of people want to know more about that, but they don't know how to find this information, you know. And of course, we are getting impacted, but so many messaging around it is difficult to funnel all these interests and really tell the people, hey, this is what you should consider. It's not what you should do, it's what you should consider is happening in the market, and this can become a market opportunity on top of a kind of personal responsibility, of course, that we all have.
I think that's right. I think everybody is concerned about the environment, and you hear a lot of news, you know, you just need to turn on the news and there's always at least some sort of story that's about, whether it's the environment or global warming or environmental damage, or it's there all the time. And I think, but turning that into something practical that you can actually do as a distributor of barcoding and point of sale, or a reseller of technology solutions into retail, there's such a gap between the reality of what's happening, what could happen, and how do you actually impact that in your business and in your customers' businesses.
It's so true. We're getting better at understanding and making a difference at home, putting things in the right bins, whether it's in the streets or whether it's actually in our homes. But how we make that difference at work, it tends to be a more challenging thing to do. So it's someone else's job. So that's their job to do that. So how do I take ownership of this and make a difference? And that's something that, hopefully through this vehicle and through other means, we'll try to help educate people on how to do that, particularly at work, and make that a more approachable subject. Because it is, like you said, Paco, it's a massive area.
Correct.
And most of what I've learned in terms of environmental sustainability have been through the company I work for. And it's their actions and their activities where has kind of opened my mind to think, wow, this is such an enormous topic that it is worth all the effort to just try and focus it down on the areas we can make a difference. Because when we see we can make a difference, then you're more likely to continue to do that and make bigger change. So
you're right. I think also the key element here is that, I mean, this is also a competitive element, right? Mm. And this is what we should try also to address. It's like, hey, it's not that you haven't directive from the European Union that we will be talking about in a few seconds. It's also like you have the opportunity to be different because your customers and your potential customers want you to be different. And if you want to be in the market for a while, I think you should be considering something like that. But why don't we start focusing a little bit this? Why don't we talk about a little bit about the European directives on that? I mean, I don't pretend you to explain me all the directives, but I mean, how is the European Union affecting our industry? How is the European Union, let's say, making a legislation which is going to become mandatory for all of us?
I think it starts off with the United Nations directive to be net zero by 2050. I think everything filters down from there, really. And I think, obviously, then there are EU directives, there are local government, national government directives, all the way down to, and then I think below that, bringing it back more specifically to our industry, there's also what the retailers themselves are doing, because I think that ultimately we as a channel, we're providing solutions into retail and hospitality and other industries, and it's what the increase in demand from retailers and hospitality companies to be either hopefully genuinely to be more environmentally friendly, or even at the same time to appear to be more environmentally friendly. I think they're both, obviously one is more genuine, the other one is, but it's important because I think if they appear to be environmentally friendly, especially if they are also environmentally friendly, then it's presenting that right image, that leadership to the rest of the industry that...
And it's so much bigger than just the EU. I think when it comes to a global company, so like the manufacturers that you work with, Blue Star work with, we need more than just the EU to take kind of ownership of sort of a standard way of recycling.
Because the products aren't actually even manufactured in the EU, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's the responsibility, if we want to close the circle, for the circular economy, to really improve that whole sustainability element, then it takes more than just one country to do that, more than one company, but it's one planet, one model. We need to kind of build a model that works in every country.
And the more any given manufacturer starts to make demands on its suppliers, whether they be in the Far East or Latin America or wherever they are, the more companies start to make those demands, the more that actually has an impact throughout the industry. And it, hopefully at some point these, sustainability becomes the industry standard that you'd hope in, at some point between now and 2050, just becomes the norm.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because back in 2020 or before, on the build up to 2020, there were so many presentations about customer loyalty will be driven by how well people manage your customer experience. So how well your business manages the customer journey or your customer experience, that's going to be the critical part to driving customer loyalty.
Yeah, I'd subscribe to that. I think if a company treats me well, I'm probably going to go there and spend more of my hard-earned money there.
Very true.
Well, we have a good discussion before that, especially when you mentioned, it's like customer experience, is not only about, let's say, being compliant to certain things that the customer expects, you know, a certain service, you know. It's also being compliant with certain kind of society mentality, you know, that as you referred before, it's like, see the bigger picture, right? I mean, you go, and you mentioned also some good examples there, when you go to a coffee shop, you know, and then you probably are willing to pay some more if you know that that coffee cup is going to be recycled, or this company is following
X, or even better, if you show up with your own coffee cup
that you
brought with you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Or recycle yourself. I don't know. Maybe one day we have to also, like, you know, like in McDonald's or all these kind of steps of change, you know, we need to take care of our own trust, probably.
Well, some of those coffee shop chains are running that as an incentive, aren't they? So you get a few pence off your coffee if you bring back and reuse your coffee cup. So
I just wish I could be that organized in my life that I could show up at the right cup at the right place. Yeah. Although I have brought my Epsom water bottle today.
Well done.
Thanks. So I get some. I need some loyalty points for that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think just going on from what I was saying about that customer experience journey was kind of the definition of loyalty, really. That was what we wanted to achieve. But now it's all about sustainability. So what we're finding is that loyalty is now being driven by people's awareness of sustainability of the companies they're buying from. Hmm. And you see that messaging everywhere. Yeah. It's now becoming quite, I mean, even in the hotel that we're staying here, everything was kind of eco-packaged, or, you know, the products that are in the bathroom are kind of sustainable. So it's a really important message for the hotel to even articulate, come back, because we're looking after, we're doing our bit. Mm. So although the messaging is there, you know, we still need to make sure that, you know, the fact, the science-based fact, still sits behind it and is real. And I think that's sometimes the hard part to...
The transparency, I mean, of making sure that people are, you know, that businesses that claim to be environmentally friendly are actually standing by that, and they're not just greenwashing.
And that's the phrase that we hear quite a lot.
The most interesting thing is that this is not only affecting the big industries. Of course, are the big manufacturers, you know, the big industries who are really pulling, let's say, the market in that direction. But certainly, you know, even the small shop in the corner, you know, is now sensitive to that. You know, it's been educated into that. But the most important, as we said before, is that it's educated, and we all are educated, so this becomes a market demand. Mm. And if you are not, let's say, into that kind of trend, you will be losing a big part of the market, right? So also the small companies should be taking a view on that.
Because they're just... whether they choose to admit it or not, they're fighting for their survival every day, you know, opening the doors, trading, whether it's virtually or you have a physical
surprise,
presence.
Surprise, yeah.
I want to pay the mortgage, I want to pay my electricity rates, you know. It's their survival over, you know, and it's human nature. We put our own survival, whether it's our business or ours, over the planet's survival. And we kind of need to, we're getting there, but there's a kind of shift towards it, but we can't do it on our own in isolation. So
I think it's interesting in some ways. Obviously, it's a small company is unlikely to have a person there that's purely in charge of sustainability. Yeah. It's unlikely that they'll do that. It'll probably be the job, sustainability will be the job of somebody who's probably the sole owner of the company, the managing director, the accountant, the cleaner, and all, you know, everything in between. Yeah. But I think so that it's in one sense it's more difficult for a small retailer or a coffee shop or whatever to be to really have a big impact, to influence the government to change and make these implement these changes, become more environmentally friendly, because it's, you know, it's one person or a handful of people, a relatively small group of people that can say, okay, well, we're going to take these initiatives, we're going to implement these things, whereas to do that within a large disparate organization like a national supermarket is something that's going to take weeks, if not months, or even years to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. It does cascade down that economy of scale. If the big retailers are putting pressure on those suppliers to be more ecologically minded and be more ethically minded, then that cascade down to those smaller retailers will work, you know, and more smaller hospitality chains. And equally, the processes and principles, it's not just the products which those suppliers are selling, but also the model in which they're shifting the products, where they're moving them around, and the way that we're capturing the waste at the end of it. So is that communicated in a way that is easy for people to understand, to be able to utilize?
But I mean communicating in a way is something, you know, but you can also be a company pretending, you know, to be green and not being green. So I think there is a lot of confusion in the market in this moment. How do you know? How can we be certain that a green stamp means really something behind?
It's a good point. I mean, I got a survey through over the weekend from. I told you who the company was before. I'm not sure if I can actually name it. I don't suppose I'm going to do two Amazon. Let's say that they're. Sorry, delete that out. a large online retailer that's named after a major river. Shall we call them? Yeah.
By the way, I really take the opportunity to say that this podcast is open for a sponsorship. Right? So.
But they sent me through a survey and asking me how environmentally friendly or how well do I understand their approach to sustainability. And I've seen an advert on
TV. How would you rate them, right?
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 5, how do I rate them? And I gave them 2 out of 5 because I've seen an advert on TV, but it's I guess for someone that has that much money, it's easy to spend money on advertising. But how genuinely do you actually think it is? And I think there is one of the things that's missing at the moment is that lack of transparency, that lack of genuine availability of information about how they're doing it. Because what you see on TV is very different from the picture of a diesel powered van driving constantly around towns and cities delivering cardboard packaging. And okay, that packaging is recycled and recyclable, but I think it's difficult, you know. I found myself being a little bit cynical about it, maybe. But
I fully understand, and I am not going to be the defender of the big companies, of the big multinationals in that level, right? But I think it's very, very difficult to cover every single aspect of being green, right? Mm-hmm. So environment is important, and I think again, seeing the big picture that we all see, is difficult to be compliant with any single aspect of your supply chain, of your production, etc. So, but I think we all know that a big change starts by small actions, right?
Yeah, just talking, just engaging with each other, starting like this as a conversation. I did a presentation just recently, actually, to a number of kind of resellers and partners, and I put up a quote from my website, and actually it was from the Epson website, and what it had was their commitment to the environment. A statement, but actually you could take the Epson name out of that and you could put any other company's name into that statement, and I think you'll see that copied on lots of different websites from large companies. The difference was that when I did my research to support that presentation, the difference was I could click on that statement on the Epson website and it took me to a whole raft of actions and metrics and awards and what they've actually achieved, and being very open about kind of the ghosts that are in the closet and being very critical of itself.
Well, those ghosts made of receipt printer paper, Dale, by any chance.
Well, and that's an important piece to acknowledge and, again, grow awareness of, about options that are out there.
Well, it goes back to what Paco was saying before. You can't do everything, but as long as you're doing some things, as long as you're doing as much as you can to address that. Yeah, sure, you're potentially, you are.
Let me give you an example, okay? I mean, we all have been told, that we should put everything in the cloud because that's, that really is, let's say, reduces also the paper, etc. In front of my house, there's just one of those big names that you were mentioning before just open a data center, a cloud, right? But this cloud is a physical big building who's taking a lot of electricity, really a lot of power, because we are talking about thousands of people employed there, During the summer, in my place, over 40 degrees centigrade, and then it's like consuming much more energy. So at the end, it's like, okay, I want to be eco-friendly, so I'm going to put all my data in the cloud, and then guess what? That cloud is really consuming. It's not very eco-friendly, I would say. So at the end, you cannot control this aspect.
I guess the thing is we just don't know, do we really? I mean, there's probably solar panels on the roof of that data center that's contributing to helping reduce their electricity bill, reduce their carbon footprint. But I think you just to some extent you just don't know. So that's why I think, going back to what you were saying before, Dale, being able to actually hold a company like Epson accountable for what, what exactly is it that you're doing? Yeah. How do you stand by this statement that you are a sustainability friendly company? How do you? Absolutely. I think that's what's lacking, I think, from the data centers, that very specific detail, or perhaps we just haven't done our research thoroughly enough. But
but that has been the challenge, I think, over the, because this, the whole sustainability message and progress that we're making is going so fast. And I think you mentioned it earlier on, Rich, about the, about COVID being a big driver of that. Certainly the awareness of sustainability and the importance of it in certain geographies. One of the areas that has become really important is the science-based fact. And what Epson did back in, was it 1997, I think now, it started this process of really understanding what it, you know, its supply chain, how long it's, I was distracted then by the sign from the videographer, but he said 20 seconds. And I thought, oh, how long?
I was going to stop now by telling you, okay, now, okay. And then looking at you and then clone 20 minutes, but okay.
Yes. But what I meant to say was that over a very quick period of time, they understood their entire supply chain, the ethics of that, how sustainable some of its suppliers were. But that piece of work, although it became a global standard of sustainable procurement, it's now become such a bigger monster because there's so many other things that we want to include.
Right.
Now it's EcoVadis is the standard in which Epson supports, and it is a science-based fact of these are the objectives that we are aiming to hit as an organization.
Correct.
And you can benchmark everybody using the same metrics. So it's a level playing field in terms of being able
to. And that's internationally recognized, right?
Yeah. So that means that any procurement person can log into this data platform where this, you know, the bigger picture data is stored and understand how sustainable or ethical the proposition is being made by a particular reseller or an ISV. So, and that's immediately available to them.
Yeah. We should put the EcoVadis website into the show notes for this, shouldn't we? Yeah, that'd be a very podcast thing to do.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. But that brings us also to our next question. You know, I think we should profit that Dale is here with us today, and then we should really go deeper into your experience. You know, as one of the, if not the manufacturer, you know, leader manufacturing in the printers. You know, so I want to address that.
Good question, Paco. It's I often say, actually, in presentations to any reseller, the most important specification of any product that we sell, it's not on the data sheet. And in fact, if any product, it's not on the data sheet. It's all about how the product was manufactured, how it was designed, and ultimately what happens at the end of its usable life. And is that considered at the very start of its product development stage? And
I mean, one of the things about that people always say to me about Epson products is they just won't fail. You know, we've had people take 10, 15, even 20-year-old receipt printers out of restaurants, coated with grease, full of you know, multiple pints of beer poured over them, and still running.
It's so, just great, it's great to have a company which is not really focused on obsolete. How do you call it in English? Programmed obsolescence.
Yeah, obsolescence.
Well, it's great, but it doesn't help me hit my sales targets every quarter because I want to sell more receipt.
You cannot have it all, Richard. You cannot have it all.
Yeah,
definitely. And actually, that was a surprise to me when I first joined the company. So many partners used to tell me, "Oh yeah," because I've been at Epson 5 years now. And they used to say, "Oh yeah, your products are so reliable. The Epson products just don't break." I thought, "Great, yeah, you just want some more marketing funds, or you've got a new idea." But I'm 5 years into the role, and I'm still getting that message. And as I'm a bit of a skeptic, I'm from Devon, so I don't believe in anything that doesn't eat grass or doesn't moo. So it's a case of actually there is something in this. And when you look at the reliability stats from the service team, you think actually this is a phenomenal reliability in everything that Epson makes, and that's purely because of the control it has in the design and development of the product. And when you really look under the hood of where that comes from, it's Epson designs and manufactures everything itself using its own people in its own facilities. Even the silicon components and the timing chips, they are manufactured and sometimes grown. They synthetically grow the timing chips themselves and then put it into their components. So there's a huge amount of control that's invested right at the very early stage of product design and development that carries all the way through. The resellers are effectively the gatekeepers to that, because reliability is synonymous with sustainability. If you don't need to replace it, you know, in 20 years' time, and I've been to customers where they're 20 years old, and even the team I work for don't know what that printer is. I've never seen that before in my life. But it was, and the customer still loves it, and they won't replace it. It's, no, it works fine. There's no issues with this. But if you haven't got to replace it, ultimately, you intrinsically, it's more sustainable, isn't it? Because it's you haven't got to replace it more often.
It's interesting that Epson's in the position where it's, you know, manufacturing, and you know, obviously, even you know, you're growing the components. You can't get any further back in terms of the supply chain than that if you're actually growing some of the components that go into your products. Obviously, not every business, especially not Blue Star resellers, for example, not everybody is in the position where they have that level of control over what's manufactured. Obviously, it comes back again to the transparency that we're looking for in terms of how do we know where the stuff comes from that we're getting, whether that be receipt printers or food or fast fashion or whatever it is.
And actually, Richard, we want people to start asking those questions, because I think that's where we draw out that greenwashing. People click on that link, you were just saying. Well, you know, you've made the statement. Tell me the facts. I want to understand how you're making these statements to
prove it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, talking about what you mentioned, the concept you mentioned before is like greenwashing. You know, one thing is of course pretending to be green, but another thing is, and I think this is a part of the confusion, as you said. So it's a great. And this is also one of the reasons why we wanted to have you here also, because Epson is a kind of model in the market. You know, it's been setting up some standards in the industry, because you mentioned also that Epson has been having a kind of green strategy, a formal one, already from 1997.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, in Japan, where they have a facility, the edge of Lake Suwa, it is.
Yeah.
And I hope I pronounced that right. Yeah, but it's a beautiful region of Japan, and they made a promise to the townspeople there that they would only improve the environment with their contributions. So it's run at the very core of the values of the company, which kind of makes me kind of proud. I need some of my friends that will say, "You're quite proud to work for that company, for Epson, aren't you?" I think I am, actually, because of what it stands for long before I even joined. I think it's, and every day I learn more about sustainability and learn more about what the company's values and what it does. So yes, I'm quite proud of that. But ultimately, that led to this kind of phenomenon which happens on a lake or Lake Suwa, is that the waves would freeze, and then all of a sudden they stopped freezing every year, and it led them to believe that although Epson is making this massive contribution to the environment, it's not enough. You know, it can't control everything, and there is a bigger issue here. And that was back in 1997. So what it decided to do was go and explore where it was getting these components from. So there, obviously, Epson makes a lot of components, but there are some elements that it still needs to buy in from other sources. So it had a critical look at where it buys all its components from, make sure they were ethically supplied, they were sustainably supplied, and that led to kind of the development of a new standard after they completed that in about 5 years' time. But they continued to kind of open those cupboards, look at and challenge itself, look at where it can make improvements, not just at a local level, but at a global level across every single site. So moving to every single site, Epson site and Epson office recycles 100% of its waste today. And then at the end of this year, beginning of 2023, every single Epson office will be using reusable energy. So there's these huge steps being made. And in 2050, it's the only company that in the world that we're certainly aware of that's going to be underground resource free. So anything that it manufactures, the energy that it uses to produce new products, will be taken from what's already in the economy.
Already in the environment.
The environment. The original standpoint, and I guess today, it's we only take it out of the ground once, keep it in the economy for as long as possible, but by 2050, we'll only use what's already available. And the technology to do that doesn't exist today. It's a bit like Elon Musk.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to Mars, but we don't know how. You know, 10 years ago, but it's a bit like that.
That's the target.
That's the vision, and that's
you
the
don't mean
commitment.
You're going to import your products from Mars, do you?
Well, who knows?
How many Epson printers are we able to sell in Mars? You know, that's probably a good podcast. You know,
new market for us. Yeah.
Retail marketing, but for the time being, open to explore. Right?
Yeah.
I think what you mentioned is really, really, really important. It's like it all starts by having a complete environmental or eco-friendly sustainability strategy that you can feel. And then that drives you to put some measurements that you can track and you can prove to the market. So coming back to the initial confusion that we were talking before, it's like, hey, we can prove that we are compliant to this, 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 and that.
Yeah. I think the more we talk about it as well, the more we can influence other companies to do that. I think the to a good extent, on the one hand, government needs to make big businesses accountable, but on the other hand, I think some of the companies that are leading this, like Epson, I was reading quite a bit about the co-op and what they do in terms of their environmental strategy. They're also having a big impact on the UK government, at least in terms of making, you know, lobbying them to make sure that what they're doing is getting noticed, so that they, you know, more pressure can be put onto people, because it's easy enough to say you must do these things, but actually if you can hold somebody up as an example and say this is what, for example, the co-op are doing, then if they're doing it, why can't you do it, Asda, Morrisons, other companies? It's a bit like the analogy of, until Roger Bannister ran a 4-minute mile, it was impossible to run a 4-minute mile. Now everybody pretty much every high level sport, I don't run a 4-minute mile, but you know, anybody at that sort of level is regularly running that and significantly less. And I think that the behaviour of companies that are out there leading the field is having a big impact on the ones that are lagging a little bit behind.
And of course, he was very open to sharing how he achieved those objectives, target setting for himself.
Yeah, good point,
and I think that's something that in business, because it's intellectual property, it's very difficult to understand how companies are achieving certain things because it's legally protected. In 2021, Epson released a lot of those, or became more open, let's say, in terms of sharing its technology, certainly the more sustainable technology, so that other companies, if they wanted to enter the market, could actually use the Epson technology, so they don't invent a dirtier one, for example, or so they could actually use that proven technology that is sustainable and then grow from that, almost like an OEM style private labeling.
I've got a question for you, Dale. One of the things that I was interested about, one particular retailer I was reading about, was that they've set themselves 5-year targets. So between 2020 and 2025, they're gonna do, for example, I think it was the co-op I was looking at again now, on this one. They have already achieved their by 2025 goal of an 11% reduction in the terms of the impact of their products. So they've actually, in terms of the products that they are selling in stores, their stores themselves are already effectively net zero.
Yeah.
So does Epson also have shorter term goals, for example? Obviously, there's the big 2050 goal that a lot of people are working towards, but have you got any examples of shorter term goals?
So yeah, so every, the goals that I just mentioned are kind of more corporate based. So it's the entire organization is set to achieve. And then every single country and every single employee is challenged by the president to make a contribution, both ethically and to a sustainable level, help other partners to, or help other people to enrich their communities, improve diversity, but also do something which contributes to the sustainability of the environment locally. And it's a very hard thing to measure when you're talking about individuals, but I think the challenge at the moment is start the conversation.
Mm.
So if we can include our resellers in that, so we have funds available to us to help, for example, with Blue Star, we can do it together to kind of start the conversation. Really.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the point is that there's, you know, we know there's funding there if anyone's got a particularly existing or a sustainability initiative that they want to put forward, that they need a bit of help, whether it be financial or marketing support to make that happen.
Sustainability managers in every country that can help put those, that can have a conversation with every reseller, every partner, to help them in their own sort of way to achieve their own targets, or maybe even help them define those targets.
I think that's a very good action. I think that's a very good message to the market, that we are willing to help if you have a plan. You know, we are willing to help, because of course it will be absolutely compliant with the policy that Epson has got, and the policy that we would like also to implement. But
it's your money we're spending, Paco, so I'm quite happy to spend it.
I'm quite happy
to put my hand in your pocket.
I see you going there. This is also my point. You know, I mean, let me play a little bit like a devil's advocate. Right? It's like all we are saying all we are listening is beautiful, sounds fantastic, you know, but that costs money. In the mind of many people, this is costing a lot of money. Yeah. So, I mean, when we talk about sustainability versus profit, you know, I think there is a clash there that is not very clear to the resellers, you know. So my question, very simple, is it profitable to go eco-friendly? Is it really wise for a company to go there? Is it a, is not a luxury that maybe they cannot afford?
Well, I think one aspect of that is that there's a role to be played, certainly by the government, probably by the retailers themselves, to offset some of those costs of, yes, it may be more expensive to produce a sustainable product versus a more disposable product. But I think if there's a benefit, whether that would be in terms of taxing or price advantages to help reduce that delta between the low cost of a throwaway product and the that somewhat higher cost of a sustainable product, if that can be, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same price to the consumer, but if it can be brought down more or less in line with it, then
is the market ready to pay more? Are we ready to pay more?
People will pay more. Yeah. I think we see it today, and your earlier example of the coffee cup, you know, people will pay a little bit extra to have a cup just to be sustainable. And I think the awareness is growing at such a rate that I think it's important for us as manufacturers, as resellers, as distributors, just to be aware of those questions that we're going to get so we can help people deal with it. I'll give you the example that I used earlier on, which was the little coffee shop I went to.
Yeah.
And it was a very ethical sourced coffee. Everything was kind of like a vegan style food and snacks. And it was an amazing place to work. They've set themselves up this kind of converted building. And it's a lovely venue, sort of post-COVID, to go and actually work if you're not in the office. And as I left the building, the owner came running out after me because I was worried. It was a cold day, it was kind of wintry. And
pay the bill.
Pay the bill. You know me too well. Okay.
But on top of that, he also had something to tell you, right?
He did, something important to ask, which was, where's your money? And I was wrapped up in my Epsom fleece, and he said, can you help me with my receipt paper? And you made the point earlier on, Rich, actually, about, you know, Epson's printing lots of paper. And there are sustainable options, but it's about that same thing about the sustainable meat and the packaging for all the meat products that the retailers use today. It's the same issue. Not many people use it, so the cost is a little bit more, but equally the awareness is not there. So we need to drive that. And that was the conversation I had was with this coffee shop, was they basically wanted a way of avoiding having commercial waste out of their building.
Right.
So I introduced them to, is it Cochlear Paper? They're a German manufacturer of vegetable ink based and vegetable paper based receipt paper that is fully compostable. So, and it will run perfectly through all of our printers. I think any thermal printer will work through. So it's a great way to kind of educate people, but equally it proved to me that they understood that this type of paper wasn't acceptable and that they needed options. And it was our job as an entire industry to educate these people.
It's interesting that the small companies like that are actually out there being innovative and really, you know, with the being the size that they are, they're actually able to implement these changes really, really quickly quite opportunistic like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. At the end, what you're meaning is that you, as a customer, you had a much better experience, you know? So at the end, I think we can conclude also that, you know, going into that kind of a strategy or being sensitive to that kind of market demand means that you can also make a better customer experience for your customers, which probably represents a great market opportunity, because a lot of people, especially the generation of our kids, you know, is very sensitive to this. They're going to be demanding that. Sure. So if their experience is good because you are serving that kind of service, I think you have a really major value add that you can offer to your customers.
And people recognize that there is a link. I think we are all, you know, consumers of it.
Yep.
But the fact that you can be more profitable as a business by offering sustainable propositions.
Is that so?
Yeah. So this is what the study and the research shows. And if that wasn't true, then ultimately it wouldn't be something that we're all interested in achieving more of. So actually we need to be more sustainable. We need to rather than just pay the extra price, understand about how we make the difference, both in our business, rather than just greenwashing. And this is the reason why we've got this sort of slight greenwashing angle mm-hmm. coming out of certain industries, is because it is more profitable. It wouldn't exist if it wasn't.
Yeah, I think
people are interested in
the point I wanted to touch on as well was the impact of the pandemic on all of this, because I think that obviously it drove lots of different behaviour in terms of shopping and eating out and that sort of thing. And I think one of the things was that people were very much more in tune with nature, maybe. I think people did have time. They were at home. They weren't travelling as much. Business travel was obviously reduced. People were getting out into nature, whether that be the countryside or local parks a little bit more. I think people were also buying local. So instead of driving to a big out of town shopping centre, they were actually going to some of their local stores and maybe getting things delivered from their local stores when they were closed. But at the same time, on the other hand. They were getting a lot more stuff delivered, so diesel trucks driving around delivering delivering stuff to people. But I think on the whole, that has changed a lot of the pandemic and people's behaviour has changed a lot of things. I think how people shop, some of those behaviours have continued.
Yeah. Certainly the pandemic, and then I think there was a boat that once got stuck in a canal. I think that whole global supply chain has driven or accelerated what we call onshoring, so the buying local but also making local too. So what we're seeing is a lot of more producers wanting to manufacture particularly garments and print garments more locally, so that rather than just ordering your container of goods and then selling what you can, it's a case of just make what you need and sell what you need rather than having all this waste left behind.
But also the circular economy in terms of fashion. I mean, my kids, whenever they want some new clothes, they sell the clothes that they have to get money to buy, whether it be new clothes or even secondhand clothes that are new to
them.
They
sell them to you or...
this is my kids. I wait until Blue Star sends me a new shirt before I change my fashion.
We are taking care of you.
Yeah, the only reason I work here is so that I get free clothes, right?
So we are close now to 45 minutes, so I think it's really time to close this podcast, podcast, as you said. So, I mean, is there anything else that we are missing in this message? I think we have been covering, how is this impacting the small business? How is this becoming a business opportunity? How the whole world is demanding things, and how the fact of having a strategy is very important to be able to prove, Are we missing anything here?
Well, there was one element on that you touched on, Rich, about how the co-op were doing it, and I think it packaging is one of the biggest challenges we have in retail today and in hospitality.
Yeah.
And it's that the challenge is to reduce it. Some retailers are doing brilliantly at it, but again, it's kind of the niche areas of retail. But what we're seeing is that convergence of the, if I'm talking the Epson world, the convergence of the colour label into point of sale and hospitality is contributing to the reduction of packaging. So reducing that waste. So that's that combined with onshoring means that we're making great inroads. And it's not just Epson doing that, but lots of other industries are being exposed to that as well. So I think it's important to note that we can't just look in isolation at one set of technology to save the planet or to save ourselves.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And I think Epson, as we've seen and as we've heard over recent months, makes a big song and dance, for want of a better expression, that they're very open is a nicer way of saying it about what they're doing in terms of sustainability and the environment. I'd like to hear more from other Blue Star partners, whether that be vendors or resellers, about what they're doing and what they'd like to do and how we can all work together.
I'm sure this is not the only one, the only podcast that we are going to be doing about this subject, because this is a topic which is very relevant in this moment.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So I think from now on we can call you Captain Planet, as we we said before. Yeah. Your nickname, Richard, cannot be repeated here, but I don't know if you want to add anything. But anyway, thank you very much indeed, Richard. Thank you very much indeed, Dale, for today's podcast.
Thank you.
And I'm sure this will not be the last time that we see each other here. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Paco. Thanks, Dale. Thank you.